And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
How are ya?
Oh, just dandy yourself.
I'm doing pretty fab. I am exhausted and sore, but in good mood.
Yes, we moved Abby.
Yeah.
So that was
fun. Yeah, you did. Yeah. Thank you.
So that was a lot of fun.
Uh-huh. A lot of fun, a lot of steps.
I met my move goal and my exercise goal according to my watch.
Yeah.
So
here's the bummer though, right? So like my phone said I did like 16,000 steps, but I didn't wear my watch. So those don't count.
No, they don't count.
No, none of them counted.
It sucks.
RIP me, but it's okay.
But yes, we had a very fun time moving Abby yesterday.
Yes, all my people came out. It was really nice.
Yeah, it ain't much, but it's honest work.
Oh, it was a lot of work.
If you could live somewhere where there's not so many stairs, though.
You know, I'm trying to do that, too. Okay.
So appreciated.
I did not have a choice in either of those.
Ask me if there was an elevator.
No.
No.
It'd be too easy.
No elevator.
So we did 2 flights up, 1 flight down every single trip. But here we are, and thank you so much, because it would have taken me infinitely longer to do it alone.
We made a day of it.
We did.
It was very fun.
We got a cute little dinner after.
We did.
And now we're hanging, recording, chilling.
We got coffees. I have a cake pop that's staring at me. It hates to see me coming. Yeah.
It's quaking in that bag.
Whew. Yeah. And we're just enjoying this day, as you've heard us talk about. I think we do every spring now. I feel alive.
Yep.
Because the sun is out. And I can see it, and it's out past 3 p.m.
Oh my God, babe. I don't have any mental illness anymore. It's warm outside.
We've been cured. It's good for the soul. It's good for the mind. It's good for the body. And
needed.
We're doing great. So I figured, since I do have a case for you today, if you were expecting this to be Abby, jinx, it's not.
Psych, I just moved yesterday.
Yes.
So Allie is being so great and doing what today.
So we'll get to that case in a second, but there's just been too much true crime news going on that I needed to take a little bit. So if you want to skip ahead, if you're a skipper, rude, but if you are, maybe I'll put like a little timestamp in the description if you just want to get right to the episode. But there are some things we just have to talk about.
Uh-huh.
So let's start first with everyone's favorite mom, Casey Anthony. I know we talked about her a little bit before, but you guys, I simply cannot believe it. So we have to talk about it a little bit more. If you lived under a rock the last 20 years, then you might not know that Casey Anthony was accused of the 2008 murder of her absolutely beautiful toddler daughter, Kaylee. Aww. In my opinion, it was the investigators that dropped the ball because they did a sweep of her internet searches, but they didn't check all browsers, and someone in that home searched for foolproof suffocation methods on the last day of little Kaylee's life, or at least the last day she was seen alive. If I remember correctly, her parents were confirmed to be at work, so I don't think we think it was them, but that search came from within the home where Casey lived, and I believe she was the only one believed to be home at that time. Depends who you ask, but so on. We won't get into the details of that case because I don't want to cry right now. Yeah. But I do want to point out that she was somehow acquitted and she's a free woman. And I will also say that even though she was acquitted, she could open up a daycare service tomorrow and there's not enough money on God's green earth you could pay me to send my child there. And I don't even have kids.
Okay, yeah. No, that's fair.
But anyway, she's made a return. My guess is the money from the 2022 docuseries must have dried up and she is looking for yet another paycheck to cash in on the brutal murder of her daughter. And she has sniffed out where to find it. It kills me that she claims that she's been a legal advocate and has worked in the legal field all of these years, because being a defendant doesn't count as being in the legal field for that long. But go off. But she just kept harping on the fact that she's this advocate, but then nowhere did she actually say the details of the advocacy that she's doing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if it's for children, I will spit out my drink.
Yeah, we'll do a spit take and we'll post it.
Because absolutely not. But then she's also on Substack, which, full disclosure, I hadn't heard of. So now I've read up on it and I understand the appeal, but it seems like it's a place where you can like read blogs or newsletters or things like that. But it's also, it's kind of like a blog forum mixed with social media.
Okay.
So you can follow and like subscribe to that. And I believe it allows you access to like communicate with the host of the blog. So like, okay, in theory, you could subscribe to her page and then like communicate with her. But to be able to have access to all of that, you have to pay. It's behind a paywall. And I believe hers is $10 per month. So that's $120 a year.
Yeah.
To be able to talk to Casey Anthony if you want. And I don't know. So you could make a, because of course I looked, you can subscribe to it, which I think is like subscribing to a newsletter. So like maybe you get like some posts from her, but I don't think that gives you access to everything because that's the free part.
Got it.
So then I think in order to communicate, you have to pay. So she currently has about 4,900 subscribers.
Oh my God.
Right now. And if these are all paying subscribers, that means that she's making nearly 50 grand a month. Absolutely insane.
I'll be.
Yes. So it's just, you know, it makes perfect sense that she has found a way to hide behind a paywall.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people have a lot of things they'd like to say to her. And if it's worth $10 to you, then they're probably going to do it. And she gets to laugh all the way to the bank. So I'm going to encourage you not to subscribe, but that's just my, this is Allie's personal opinion. I'm not going to, you know, say anything either way. You do you, boo. But I wouldn't give her a red cent.
No. Wow. Wow. What do you, how do you figure her brain scans would come back?
I don't know.
What do you think isn't lighting up or is lighting up that should or shouldn't be?
I don't know. I know that like Nancy Grace is like nearing like her head blowing up.
Uh-huh.
The return of Top Mom. I don't know if you remember, but when all of the Casey Anthony stuff was going on back in, I think, 2008 to 2011 is really when it was like really in the news.
Yeah.
Nancy Grace talked about her almost daily.
Yeah.
And, you can have a lot of opinions on Nancy Grace and we're not going to go into those, but she harped on the fact that this, like, she wholeheartedly believed that Casey Anthony murdered Kaylee Anthony.
Yeah.
And that she was aware of it, that she purposefully led investigators down different rabbit holes with Zanny the Nanny and all this stuff. Ugh. And there's this really funny part. If you look into the Casey Anthony case like I did, I don't know if I'm ever going to cover it because it just hurts so bad.
Yeah.
But
it's rough.
She lied to investigators and said that she worked at Universal. Remember, she lived in Orlando, Florida. So Universal is located in Florida.
Yeah.
So she led investigators there and they were like, okay, like, where's your office? Where do you work? And so she's going like into the admin building and she just keeps going and going and going and like getting allowed into like the next door and the next door. And then they get so far and she's like, yeah, I don't actually work here. She never worked there.
That's so fucking funny. It's ridiculous.
But it was almost like this magical thinking where it was almost like she thought if she just kept going,
they'd be like, oh, okay, we don't need to see it.
Well, not even that. Or like someone would just play along.
Right.
Like an office for her would appear. It was like that kind of like hyper delusional wishful thinking of like, yeah, oh, maybe like an empty office will be there and be like, this is mine. Or like someone else will cover for her or play with that. But like she was never an employee there. Never, ever. And she was claiming even to her family before Kaylee was missing that like that's where she went all day. Huh. Like that's where I have work and this is where I work and this is where I'm going. Huh. Not an employee. Never was. So these kind of like stretched out long road lies, yeah, that she told, it's like, isn't that so hard to keep straight? I do not have a good enough memory to be a liar. I can't.
No.
And I'd feel guilty. Like I can't even do the white lie. I think it says it on my face. I don't do that. I can't because it. And I'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then I'll like lose sleep over it. Like, I'm not built like that. So I don't know what the hell. And then if we consider the very slim chance, and I'm saying slim. chance that she's not involved with that. Why would you want to keep reliving it?
Truly.
Why? Just go do something else. Go
distract yourself.
Why bring attention to it again? Like, you got away with it somehow. Lay low. Okay? Go put your head in the sand somewhere.
Please.
This is just, it's absolutely
I'm curious
insane.
What the people who would pay to talk to her have to talk to her about.
I think there are people that think she's innocent. When we did our poll on Instagram a couple weeks ago, I put options. It was like, do you think she did it? Like 95% of you were like, oh yes. But there were a couple of you that were like, I'm not convinced.
Okay.
So I'm like, first of all, I want to talk. But like what part of it, like what piece of evidence did you question? Cause I think they're worth having conversations about, but I'm like, what did you read and where did you read it? Cause I need to know. Cause everything I've seen points to undoubtedly being her.
Yeah.
But anyway, the next true crime update I wanted to give you, initially I was like, oh, that's odd. And then I connected the dots and saw the inmate they were talking about, and then I just knew we had to talk about that. So the next current event, the Ghost Adventures star, do you know Aaron Goodwin?
No.
Okay, so that's a show that I didn't know. I don't know if it's still on, but it's like one of those paranormal reality shows where they go out all the places and they have all the cameras and
they go aliens. No, I'm kidding, but yeah,
but yeah, and it's like they do all of these things, and yet if they found anything, wouldn't it be like in the news and like be a thing? But there's like seasons of it. Anyway, the show Ghost Adventures. One of the cast members on that is Aaron Goodwin. And his wife was just arrested.
Oh.
For what, you might ask?
Yeah, what?
Plotting his murder.
Oh.
Yes, 32-year-old Victoria Goodwin solicited help from a Florida inmate. Dare I say, a Florida man. Who was then supposed to arrange sort of the hit with an outside hitman to murder Aaron Goodwin. So the wife went to the inmate coordinated with the hitman was to kill Aaron. But here's the wildest part. Guess who the inmate was?
Who?
Grant Amato.
Wait, like sex cam one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That Grant Amato.
Grant.
That one.
Get it together, Grant.
He don't give a shit. So if you don't remember, we covered the Grant Amato case back in episode 68. He's the shithead that was sending thousands upon thousands of dollars to a cam girl on another continent. Thousands of dollars he didn't have. Thousands of dollars that he stole from his parents, that he lived essentially in their basement and was freeloading. He got fired from his jobs and he maxed out credit cards. He took out loans in his parents' names that they didn't know about to send money to this woman. Thousands of dollars. And she lived in some European country.
Yeah.
Like, she wasn't anywhere near him. They were never going to meet. He believed that she was just as into him. It's funny, when the money dried up, she didn't reach out.
Yeah.
So that's different. But after all of that, his family was understandably furious. Because he basically sent them into financial ruin to fund this like kind of seedy exchange with a woman that obviously didn't care about him, and it's transactional. I mean, it's part of it's a con, part of it's a, you know, she didn't swat away his money by any means, but
no,
like, there should be an understanding if you're going to participate in that like the person on the other end isn't in love with you, right? They're
providing a service for a fee,
and this is the service that they've chosen to offer, and that service might cost a lot of money, but that money paid to them doesn't mean that like they love you.
Yeah. And that once you stop paying, the service is no longer provided because that's what they're selling.
Correct. And you're one of many. You know that, right? You're one of many people that are sending that. So you're not special.
Yeah.
And that's I don't mean that to sound mean, but like that is the essence of that transaction.
Yeah. This is my business model. Businesses have customers.
In the same way that, you know, he could be paying several other women.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that she's his only,
they weren't exclusive.
Right. I don't know how else to say this.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But he was like, oh, yes. And as a result of all of this, he killed his entire family. He murdered his mother, his father, and his brother systematically as they got home. He's a monster. So if you haven't listened to that, episode 68, I'm biased, of course, but I recommend it because I think it's absolutely so wild. But Grant somehow starts talking to Victoria, this man's wife, on a phone that he had gotten in prison. So I don't know how he ended up with it, but obviously it was contraband.
Oh, I have an idea how.
Well, yeah. And he was somehow facilitating this. I don't know how they got into contact. I don't know how they met. I believe it was either on Facebook Messenger or some messenger app. I don't think it was text messages. Mm-hmm. But then the prison guards did a sweep and they found this phone, and thankfully they went through the phone. They didn't just toss it or throw it in a bag and lock it up, but they did find those messages, and it was only in reading those messages that they found out there was a murder plot for the outside.
Oh my God.
This plan was in motion
already.
This wasn't a fantasy dream that, she was mad at her husband and just kind of wanted to
express
how frustrated she was. And, sometimes I just wish I could kill him. This was cold, hard, calculated murder on her part. And in their texts, she's quoted as saying the following. So these are from NBC. I have it all linked, but we need to go over it. She said, "I'm so anxious, LOLOL." And the LOLOL is in caps, just so you know. Then she said, "I just can't believe it's happening." And then another one, "How did I get to this point? Am I a bad person?"
Yeah, but.
And then Grant responds and was like, "Why would you think that?" Because he's like, "I've killed people. What's the big deal?"
Yeah.
And she replies, "Because I chose to end his existence, not divorce."
Babe, just get divorced.
Yeah, you are a bad... You are calculating the murder of the man you got married to something less than 2 years ago.
Oh my gosh. It's not that deep. Get divorced.
You do not need to end someone's life because you don't want to deal with them anymore. Who the hell do you think you are?
God.
To do that.
The judge, the jury, the executioner.
And then she found the perfect person to just confirm all of the, to validate what she's feeling.
Well, and he's getting attention from a female, which seems to be something he would kill over.
A D-list celebrity, too. So it's, even more so, appealing, probably to him. And, he's got the walls that he's behind. That's it. There is no outside life to him. He's not going to have the opportunity to. He felt no remorse over the murder of his family. I think that's pretty clear, especially now trying to plot the murder of somebody else while he's there. But also, what does he have to lose? What are they going to do? Send him to prison?
Yep.
Oh, heavens.
I don't want to get an LWOP. Oh.
It's just... But these are the... Those are the things you have to consider when somebody has nothing to lose.
Yeah.
So I thought that was fascinating. I did not expect to see Grant Amato. He was not on my bingo card of true crime this year.
Holy crap.
Things that were on my true crime bingo card were that Karen Reed would be tried again. We knew that was happening, but I don't know what's going to happen with that. That's ongoing. The state police, Massachusetts state police, have fired Michael Proctor, who was the detective on the case. He is linked to some other kind of shady things. I don't want to get into all of the Karen Reed case, but know that it's going on right now. Pretty big blow to prosecution's case that he was fired.
Yes.
Some of the text messages that he sent about her were just vile. So if you don't know, Karen Reed's accused of murdering her cop boyfriend. He was a Boston police officer 2 years ago, I believe. Yeah. And there was just a little mini series released on her, or maybe just a single episode. I haven't watched it yet, but I've seen some of the highlights of it. And some of the way that she words things, it's like, I get where she's coming from, but she should have not said the way she said it. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, she said now, you know, 2 years have passed since the murder. Well, murder, his death.
Yeah.
His accused murder, supposedly, because it's still not
confirmed.
I don't believe so. I don't know. But, you know, he's been dead 2 years. So now he's been dead longer than they were together.
Yeah.
You know, so she's like, it has eclipsed the time that we had together. And she's like, now it's not about John. It's about me and saving me. With this, she kind of makes herself sound like an ass.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is helpful for her. But I get where she's coming from, where in a way, in a sense, where she's like, she needs, her focus now needs to be on her case and her freedom. Yeah. And it probably really mixed the feelings of like grief that she had over losing her boyfriend, but also like to be accused of his death if you didn't contribute to it makes grieving so different, because now there's all the stress and like anger about the way that he passed, or, you know, what could he have done? What did other people do? What could she have done? Like all of those what if questions that sort of come up. And I think that maybe that was where she was coming from, but like she did not explain that well.
No, and it's hard because I understand the sentiment, but you have to articulate yourself well.
You also sound really callous and like a bitch to say, well, now it's just about me now. I'm like, a man is dead. A good man.
Yeah.
A really good man. A man who took in his nieces and nephews because they didn't have anybody, because his sister like tragically died, and he was doing his best to raise them and work and care for her and do all of these things.
Yeah.
Like, do I think that John O'Keefe was like a perfect man? No, because that doesn't exist.
Right.
But he was a good one from what I've gathered, and his life was tragically lost, whether it was a murder, an accident, or something else. But like for her to be like, well, I just need to worry about me now. I'm like, I get that, but you said the quiet part out loud. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course you have to worry about yourself because the rest of your life can be significantly impacted by this. But a man is still dead.
And you loved him.
So
at some point, you loved him.
You know, there's that. So Michael Proctor being fired from the Massachusetts State Police is a big deal, especially in this case, because his behavior in investigating and the texts he sent about Karen Reed and his private phone. But you can't talk about a case, an ongoing case.
Right.
The way that he did and expect that not to negatively impact you.
Yeah.
So all of that to say, there's a lot going on in the true crime world, and that's not even getting into Gypsy Rose, okay?
Gypsy! Oh my gosh.
And her mom era. What I say last year, I said that my prediction was that she'd be divorced or pregnant by the end of the year, and she was both divorced and pregnant by the end of the year, so...
Naps for you.
I think we're gonna see a lot of, like, baby content from her. I think it's gonna be a lot of, like, here's my Amazon storefront.
I heart my mommy.
Yeah,
here's the breast pump that you have to have. Yep. They're sponsoring this video.
I think she's gonna be a mommy influencer. That's my prediction.
That's so fucking ironic, but okay.
I know. Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's not lost on either of us.
No.
What a time to be alive. What a...
And if anyone could be like an advocate, a legal advocate, I'm just saying, Gypsy could advocate for like Munchausen's by proxy victims.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just saying.
What a time to be alive.
What a time. So I just thought we had to talk about that with everything else that's going on on this planet. You know, we don't get into politics. We don't do any of that here. This is our safe space where we just talk about crime and other things and learn and grow together. And that's all part of the fun. And if you forgot, we do not represent our places of work.
Nope. No, we sure don't.
This is entirely separate.
This is for fun.
This is for us. This is for fun. This is for this community that we've built. This is our personal lives. And we do this in our free time.
Woohoo!
And we love that we get to hang out with you while doing it. So, if you don't have any other thoughts, I figured maybe we get into today's case.
Well, I have no thoughts, heads empty. I am so excited to hear what you have to tell me today.
I have zero, nothing's going on.
No.
My one brain cell's bouncing off the corners of my brain like the DVD symbol.
Yep, the lights are out upstairs. No one's home. But I do want to hear what you have to say today because you told me the name of this case and I'm itching. Yes, I gotta know.
I do think the name of this case will be Russia's Granny Ripper.
Uh-huh.
Because I was going to have the Granny Ripper of Russia, but then I didn't want people to think it's somebody who's like ripping grannies. You know?
Yeah.
Like be like, oh my God, you just went from like these awful child stories to now like
elderly
women being ripped.
Yeah.
This just sounds horrible. So
honestly, if we mean ripped as in like swole or strong, that's great. But I'm sure that that's not what we mean.
Yeah, the quads on her are just
Quadzilla, insane. You know?
You seen these God. Biceps? She could she could deadlift a bus, okay? No, today's case is actually taking us to, you may have guessed, Russia. Maybe you've heard of it.
Oh, yeah. So... Ayoo-hoo! Pods on. Let's hear about some swole grannies.
So today's swole granny is Tamara Mitrofanova Samsonova.
Okay.
So she was born Tamara Mitrofanova. I will say again, I am but a girl in New England who does not know how to pronounce all of these. I'm doing my very best, so I apologize if you're listening to me and you're rolling your eyes because you actually do know how it's pronounced and I'm saying it wrong. I am but a girl.
Yeah, you can let us know kindly, but also Slavic interpretations are hard.
Yes, and I will preface this with saying that there are few resources available on this case and fewer in English.
Yeah.
So I would find these Russian articles that looked awesome and then I would try to find a way to translate them and they were near like almost unreadable.
Yeah.
Where I didn't trust that translation of like, oh, there's valuable information, but I don't know for sure that I can trust this. So I didn't want to just repeat it if I wasn't pretty confident in it. So with that being said, let's talk about Tamara.
Okay.
Tamara was born April 25th, 1947, in a small town in Soviet Union era Russia. After high school, Tamara relocated to the capital of present-day Russia, Moscow, to attend college at the Moscow State Linguistic University.
Oh, okay.
Here, she learned different languages, and I'm sorry I couldn't find anything more concrete than that, as, again, most sources are in Russian, and not all translations are built equally. However, it is stated in several sources that due to her mastery of several languages, that she was a very marketable candidate in lots of different kinds of work, which we will touch on in a little bit. But I do believe she spoke English and maybe French, I saw. So I'm not going to hang my hat on that, but I'm pretty sure.
That checks.
After graduating with her degree, she married Alexei Samsonova.
Okay.
So that's where Samsonova comes in. And this marriage happened in 1971. And I believe just after they got married, they moved to St. Petersburg.
Aww.
The newlyweds moved into an apartment in a panel building. And I read that and I was like, what's a panel building?
Yeah.
And maybe you're also at home wondering, what's a panel building? Well, ma'am, sit tight. I'm going to tell you.
Oh, okay.
Panel buildings are actually a common sight in present-day Russia and much of the former Soviet Union countries. Not all of them are pretty, I'll say that. Some of them can look cold and monotonous and very standardized. Prior to World War II, cities weren't equipped with enough housing to house the surge of people moving to the city post-war. And according to Russia Beyond, in 1917, 17% of people lived in cities, as most others lived in villages outside of the cities. But post-war, in the 50s, about 50% of people lived in the cities. Holy so that is cow. A pretty significant surge, more than 30% of people moving to the city. So that's a big difference. The Soviet Union communist dictator at that time, Nikita Khrushchev, and his Congress passed legislation. I don't know if you even need to pass legislation in a communist dictatorship, but we'll call it that. They dedicated a lot of resources to building these giant apartment buildings.
Good.
The Communist Party believed that every family should be given their own apartment at no cost to them, and the government was just the perfect landlord. When something is freely given by the government, not only is it not free, but you also have no control over the quality, because beggars can't be choosers, and the value and quality and integrity of that thing often suffers.
Can I just say?
Yeah.
I struggle every day, every single day that I have had to interact with or work with government officials on like quality of things. And whenever they're like, we don't need to do like the best here. I'm like, we don't need to do the best, but like by doing the least, that's how Chernobyl happened.
Yep.
Just a fun reminder. That's how Chernobyl happened.
I think when you say the government will take care of me and you say the government will provide things for me and like I need that, you're at the mercy of what they're willing to do.
You're also at the mercy of that specific individual and what they're willing to prioritize.
Well, right. But it's rarely specific individuals. It's an entire group of people that are trying to cut costs. And you know what I mean? So as you can imagine, these were not luxurious.
Yeah.
These were not even always up to code. Nope. As what we refer to them as, you know, today. But where a lot of people had been living in like communal living before this, having their own space was a lot more attractive.
Yeah.
But they were built so fast, like in a matter of weeks, just ground up these giant buildings. Think concrete, think small living quarters, think cramped, think lots of stairs. For example, you know, it was very expensive to have elevators. So when we're talking about cutting costs, they were naturally built without elevators. Maybe your apartment was a panel, but I'm just kidding. But all of that to say that, you know, they found the cheapest way to build them, and it was to make them smaller and, for lack of a better term, cramped.
Yeah.
But hey, it's free and you get what you pay for. But I bring all of this up not because I'm an infrastructure connoisseur, but because this is relevant to this case, at least a little bit, just to kind of picture this sort of post-war era living. And it kind of looked dreary, and it's, you know, the 70s. So we're heading into like the fall of the Soviet Union in this time. And there's a lot going on here. But these panel buildings can still be found in the outskirts of nearly every Russian city. And personally, I'd love to travel to Europe. And you bet your bottom dollar, after researching this case, I want to go explore one.
Yeah.
I want to see one.
I took Russian for years in college, and I am so fascinated by all of this culture. I want to go so bad. I have so many weird little bits of information about it now from my professors.
I want to go see all of the things. I want to travel all of Germany. I want to see Russia. I want to go to Ukraine. I want to go to Italy. I want to go to France. I want to go to the UK. Like, I want to go to like everything on the across the pond. I want to go. Yes. I want to go see it. Let me see it.
A guy on YouTube, I'll try to find his channel. I'll link it below. But he goes and like basically just travels through almost uninhabited or like very rural areas in what used to be the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating. It's wild. I'll have to, it's funky because he like interacts with people. He finds these strange people. They give him like homemade vodka. He'll like, you know, bring vegetables or whatever. And they'll like cry of happiness because they're like, the food truck only comes once a week.
Wow.
Yeah. It's
like
nuts.
Still living with the impacts of. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So very wild. I just thought a little history with your true crime today.
Yes, for
little,
sure.
A little fun, but overstating the scene, but I thought it was kind of interesting. And this is kind of the place that they moved into.
Yes. Yeah, so here we are. We're in a panel building.
Mm-hmm. Tamara lived in one of these small apartments with her husband, Alexei. And while I don't know what her husband did for work, it is reported that she excelled in work.
Good.
She was a travel agent because of her linguistic skills. She could communicate with many people from all different backgrounds and cultures, and she was personable and well-liked, and this made her valuable. It's also reported that she switched gears a little bit, and she began a career working for Grand Hotel Europe, which is a 5-star luxury hotel in the heart of St. Petersburg.
Oh, damn.
And these same rules applied. Her skills and personality made her a great fit to work at this hotel, which often hosted very wealthy travelers from all over the world. And so she worked there for about like 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to 2000, though. Her husband, Alexei, was missing.
Oh.
And I'm talking about like the 2000s. Some sources say soon after she reported him missing, but I did see a source that said 2005, so I can't be sure exactly. But
right.
Apparently she did report him missing, though I believe she said something to the effect that he had likely run off with another woman.
Oh.
The couple had been married nearly 30 years in 2000, and saying he had cheated and had taken off seemed to police that this was more of a personal domestic problem rather than a criminal and legal one. And they didn't really push it so far. And Tamara continued her life sans husband.
Okay.
For some extra cash, now that she was single, she began renting out a room in her apartment. But it seemed that she had never had tenants for long.
Okay.
Hmm. But let's jump all the way to 2015.
Oh, man. Okay, so das vidaniya, Alexei. Uh-huh. See you never.
Yes. Tamara was 68 years old.
Okay.
And she decided her apartment needed some renovations.
Okay.
At the same time, an 80-year-old woman named Valentina Ulanova needed a tenant who could help her around the house as she was getting older. She was unable to do a lot of the housework that needed to be done. She wasn't able to like stand for long periods of time. So like the dishes, a lot of the cleaning, maybe the grocery runs.
Yeah.
But in exchange, she would have like you could live there.
Yeah.
So it seemed like this mutually beneficial arrangement that she was looking for somebody. And Tamara was younger than her by about 12 years.
Yeah.
And she was still pretty spry and seemed like a decent fit.
Yeah.
Tamara could help her out, but also stay out of her apartment while the renovations were going on, so she wouldn't need to worry about that.
Okay,
this would be a, kind of a good temporary arrangement. So Tamara moved in with Valentina in March of 2015.
Okay.
While in theory this sounded like a good fit, in practice it was anything but. Valentina grew frustrated because Tamara wasn't doing the things they had agreed upon.
Well, yeah, that's part of the arrangement.
So like the dishes weren't done and the cleanups weren't done. And so essentially Valentina had a freeloader in her place. And then on top of it, a lot of needs weren't met.
Right.
And Valentina just grew frustrated. And it actually got so bad that Valentina approached Tamara and asked her to leave.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, you're no longer welcome here. But Tamara had no intention of leaving.
Oh, no.
Because she loved Valentina's home. And I believe it was like this big, beautiful home. And Tamara had never lived in anything like that. She had been in panel housing and
it wasn't
glamorous. I don't think it was very nice, and she was able to rent out a room like for some extra cash, but I don't think it ever really was, she was ever able to like get ahead.
Right.
To be able to own something of her own, at least from what I can put together. So then she's living with Valentina and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I don't want to leave. And Valentina's like, you need to leave. You're not doing the things that were part of this agreement.
Right.
But Tamara said, no. Tamara had a plan.
Okay.
And that plan did not include leaving. No, ma'am, it did not. She didn't give a dimsdale dim-a-dam that Valentina wanted her out, but instead she made one of Valentina's favorite meals. An Olivier salad? Are you familiar with that?
No.
I think that's how it's pronounced. With all due respect, this salad sounds horrid.
Yeah.
But that is coming from me, a grown woman with the taste buds of an 8-year-old boy.
What's in it? Do you know?
I'll tell you. This salad, according to my research, was very popular in post-Soviet Russia and is still a common dish there today. It's a spin on a potato salad. You likely know if you're from the States, so you know it's got a heavy pour of mayo. But this Russian salad often has peas, pickles, potatoes, boiled eggs, boiled carrots, everything finely chopped in a mayo dressing, and then salt and pepper to taste. No. Respectfully, no thank you. But if I were starving, or this is all that I had, and these are all that you had, you know, you try to, you do you do your best with what you have. And a lot of incredible food comes from, a lot of comfort meals come from eras where...
Yeah, necessity.
Yes. Where nothing went to waste. And so you didn't say, well, peas don't go with boiled eggs. You say today they do.
You say, we're going to try it. And hey, I didn't hate it. So and we're going to eat it again sometime.
Sometimes it sticks.
Yeah, I remember when I was taking my Russian classes, my professor was from Russia and from Soviet Union Russia, like the very end of it, mm-hmm. and then lived through the fall. And she, first of all, fucking loved Soviet era Russia. But oh, I think that's because it was really difficult coming out of that. And I get that. But she would talk about the food that they had. And I just like, they had these cold soups. And I know they serve cold soups everywhere. But that's not for me. My soup is supposed to be warm in my tum. You know? No, I want an acai bowl if I'm spooning something out of a cold bowl.
Yeah.
You know? I know that's ridiculous. But some of the food is a lot. Some of it's totally fine. And some of it's really good. But like... some of it's just hard to wrap my little mind around, my little noggin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that checks.
Yeah. What a woman.
It's a lot. There's a lot. And if this is something that you like, all the power to you. In fact, more for you, because I won't.
Yeah, you can have my portion too, babe. I'm not going to yuck you yumming this.
No, I'm not yucking your yum. I'm simply not yumming on it. So Correct. Here, have this to yum. Because I choose to yuck. Anyway, Tamara, knowing that Valentina loved this kind of meal,
had a girl,
whipped one of these bad boys up and served it to Valentina. And perhaps Valentina viewed this as a peace offering.
Okay.
But Tamara had no intention of making peace.
No.
What Valentina did not know was that Tamara had crushed up some pills and worked them into her dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You see, prior to making this salad, Tamara had traveled her little ass to a nearby city and approached a pharmacist and somehow convinced him to sell her some phenazepam.
Okay.
This drug belongs to the benzodiazepine class of drugs, and benzos have this calming effect, and depending on the dosage, can be more like a sedative than anything. These are prescribed sometimes as daily or others as needed medication for anxiety, sometimes for sleep disorders. There's some different purposes, but they are also highly addictive,
mm-hmm.
but they are sedatives. I mean, these are...
they knock you out. They calm your nervous system, and you are real calm with them.
Correct.
Yeah.
Apparently, this particular one, phenazepam, was created in Russia in the 70s. I do believe it's legal in the US and most of Europe. But it's so potent that people were overdosing quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if maybe those things have changed, like the composition of it maybe has been adjusted since then, because I know that we're talking about like the 70s when it was first introduced, but we are talking about 2015 when it was given to Valentina.
Okay.
But I do believe in some places it's found to be used as a date rape drug because of those side effects, because it includes loss of coordination and drowsiness and amnesia. And especially amnesia is sort of a big deal in trying to recall something that's happened to you.
Yeah.
And being unable to do so. This medication, when mixed with others, like maybe an antidepressant or pain medication or even alcohol, without strict doctor supervision, this can be fatal.
Got it.
So all of this to say that this substance is pretty significant, and Tamara pretty easily got her hands on it. Valentina fell unconscious as a result after she finished her salad. Mm-hmm. It was quite literally her last meal. But sources vary on this next part, because she either overdosed and died as a result of this medication, or almost did. And when Tamara saw that Valentina was no longer able to defend herself or put up a fight, she moved on to step two, disposal. Tamara dismembered Valentina's body using knives and a saw. She removed her arms, legs, and head, and it's possible that, depending on the source, she might have been alive at the time she was dismembered. Gosh. Tamara, now alive does not mean conscious, but alive.
But still.
Tamara moved in in March of 2015, and Valentina was murdered July 23rd, just 4 months later.
Oh my goodness.
Tamara then bagged up the dismembered pieces of Valentina's body and then scattered these bags near a pond.
Okay.
But soon after, a couple was out for a summer's day stroll, as you would. You know how we love to stroll.
Yeah.
And they were walking their dog, and they came across one of these bags, and their dog was showing a lot of interest in this bag. Like, sure. Wouldn't leave it alone interest in this bag. Like, this dog just wouldn't quit. And so they just had to know what was in it, because it's not every day that your dog doesn't leave this random, odd bag alone. And when they did peel it open, they found a torso.
Mm.
Which wasn't on their bingo card either, I'm assuming. But obviously troubling, traumatizing, scary. And immediately they called for help. Other bags were then discovered, as well as a shower curtain that had been used to wrap some of the pieces. So a shower curtain from Valentina's bathroom.
Okay.
Of course, the community was horrified. But by July 27th, the victim was identified as 79-year-old Valentina Ulanova. When they went to Valentina's home, police were greeted by none other than our good friend Tamara. In the home, they found traces of blood spatter. They found remnants of that bathroom curtain.
Yeah.
So it was so cut and dry. It was so easy. The body was found very quickly. Identified very quickly, and then she was still at this house. Like, she didn't leave, but if you're thinking about it the way I am, she just wanted to stay. So why would she kill her and then leave?
Right.
Not going to go anywhere. I think she was anticipating nobody finding that body.
Which is wild, but okay.
Yes. Worse for Tamara, not for everybody else, CCTV footage actually captured Tamara making something like 7 trips to this area, like around this pond, and she was carrying these big bags to these various places around the, like, it's haunting to see, like, this 68 69 year old lady carrying bags and just not bringing them all to the same
hauling
spot
bags,
like
yeah.
moving them to different areas around this body of water. I mean, she's nearly 70, and if I were to see a 70-year-old woman on a walk, maybe I'd expect little, like, wristbands and 2-pound free weights in her hands. Like, that is my goal. I hope to be doing that at 70.
Yeah.
Staying active, keeping moving, like, got my little 2-pound dumbbells, and I am cruising.
Your little sweatpants on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe little leg warmers. Maybe I'm trying to have some fun. I'm sure those will be back in style soon. But rather than the little wristbands and 2-pound free weights, she just had severed pieces of her former landlord/housemate.
Yeah.
And you guessed it, Tamara was arrested. But Tamara's story does not end there.
Oh.
Because in her home, they found her diary in which she confessed to several murders.
Oh my gosh.
In one entry, she claimed to have cut a tenant into pieces in the bathroom with a knife and put the pieces of his body in bags and then threw them away in different parts of the Fruzensky district.
Okay.
There are several other entries like this, confessing to, I believe, at least 3 other murders, but investigators believe she could be responsible for the deaths of up to 14 people.
Okay.
Back in 2003, she had a tenant named Sergei Patanin. He was a 44-year-old man from Norilsk, N-O-R-I-L-S-K.
Yeah.
Norilsk.
Yep.
Norilsk. Anyway, that's going to lose meaning if I keep saying it. Anyway, I believe it's like northern Russia, like Siberia. So he had made quite the move.
Yeah.
And he had rented that room in her apartment that we talked about. And again, after an argument with her, don't know what it was about, she murdered, dismembered, and disposed of his remains in a similar manner. So she has this sort of like pattern worked out. And maybe in 2003, with fewer security cameras around, you might have gotten away with it a little bit easier than you do in 2015, which he's very clearly caught on camera.
Yeah. It just seems, even still, like, that's a lot of dead, decaying body parts in bags. So, I hate to put this image in your head, but they're not decomposing.
Mm-mm.
Because nothing decomposes in a landfill, no matter what the eco trash bags tell you. It is chemically impossible. But to then have that putrid of a smell in that many places to go entirely unnoticed until they were thrown at a park.
Mm-hmm.
Is wild to me.
And it didn't always mean that it was in the same area that this was happening.
Of course, yeah.
But she would, I mean, this was her, like, this worked for her to dismember them, to clean up anything in her home when she was murdering them in her apartment. Neighbors must not have noticed. I don't think that anything, like, seeped through. I don't think anything was even left in her house long enough to smell. These were brought out and discarded in different places so that you wouldn't really be able to connect it. And a lot of identifying parts of them were removed. Like, it's really hard to identify somebody from a torso.
Oh, I know. I just mean, like, even in the trash bin waiting for the trash truck to come pick it up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all of this is insane.
Nuts.
It's absolutely... I mean, just because you get in a fight with somebody does not mean you are deserving of ending. Like, you don't get to decide that.
No, and you're not a butcher. Stop it.
Well, she had the experience. Anyway, it also is reported that when some of these remains were discovered of some of her past victims, because she, again, kept a pretty detailed diary, some of these remains were missing. Some of these organs were missing, like lungs. And investigators have not ruled out that she may have eaten them.
Okay.
So we may be entering the cannibalism era here. The little crossover, unsure, can't confirm. I don't think anybody can confirm. And we'll talk about why she might not be the most reliable historian. But you might be wondering about her husband.
Yeah, Alexei.
Since he just went missing. We can't confirm she murdered him. His remains have never been found, but in my opinion, it is the most likely scenario.
Yeah.
However, if he did leave her, I could see being left as being a catalyst in her downward spiral.
Yeah.
So even if she did not murder him, his abandoning of her could have, like, prompted...
Yeah,
it isn't the sole root of it.
Quote unquote snap could have been the catalyst for all this.
It's not the root cause.
No,
there's
got to
be some other underlying things going on, but this could have been like the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak.
Right.
But it also depends on when you think this happened, because I mean, we're going to talk about it in a little bit here, but I imagine she was already struggling with mental health.
Yeah.
Tamara was determined to be a threat to herself and others while the investigation was ongoing. She was held in a secure psychiatric facility as a result. She was deemed legally insane and is still in a psychiatric facility to this day. From what I can see, she is not out. Some reports state that she was diagnosed with schizophrenia.
Okay.
And this is possible. And other reports also say that she had been hospitalized previously, so before she was arrested, she may have been inpatient prior to this, but not every source states that, so I kind of take that with a grain of salt. It's possible, but not confirmed. Again, there are limited reports on this case, and of those, fewer in English, or at least reliably translated to English, so I've presented you with what I've read.
Yeah.
But I also want to talk about some holes in the story, and other theories I have, and maybe you have. But however, this is speculation, and I'm just kind of chatting about this because this is interesting to me and also important to talk about. There are real people that died as a result, and I don't think that everything has been uncovered.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying I've got concrete research to back this up. But knowing what we know, I find it hard to believe that she was successful in her career as described. I mean, it sounds like she was very well-liked and was able to... have this pretty solid job at this hotel and as a travel agent prior to that, where she was able to connect with all different people from all different areas, speaking all different languages and all different walks of life. That's a skill. That's a talent. Yeah. And that's great that she was able to do that. But if she's struggling and battling her mental health so much so that she is dismembering tenants in her home and possibly consuming them, I don't believe that she would have been able to keep those two parts of her life separate that way. Or if she was, maybe schizophrenia is not the diagnosis I would think she would have received.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I almost wonder, because she got successful in her career with Alexi.
Mm-hmm.
So I do wonder how much of him being around versus not around impacted her mental health. Because even if she had this, if she had, like, you know, schizophrenia is by no means an easy mental health disorder to have. It's not an easy mental illness to manage, but like you can relatively manage it. And it seems like it would mostly impact interpersonal relationships. So like, I guess it's possible if she's not working with customers very long, the customers would probably love her. But I do agree. Like, I think it'd be difficult for her to keep a positive, long-lasting relationship with a boss or coworkers or the people that she would see daily. It's also interesting then, because if, you know, regardless of if she is behind Alexi's disappearance or if he did run off with someone else, which both seem plausible, then I wonder how much not having that support added to the downward spiral.
Right. And, you know, we're coming at this with our 2025 lens of mental health and schizophrenia and knowing the vast array of services and treatments that we have available to people that are suffering with that, and that they can live a very meaningful and, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, like typical life.
Yeah.
Managed and treated. Not that there won't be tough days, but we know so much more and there's so much more available. We're talking about post-Soviet era Russia, psychological health care.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it was lacking. So to assume that she would have had all of the things available to her that we would expect to be available today is not it. So we kind of have to remember that we're looking at this, you know, from the onset, could have been around when she was in her, typically in your 20s is when that might present. And she sort of grew up, I mean, it sounds like she was born in 47. She was married in 71. So she was 24 when she got married.
Yeah.
So she's right around the age when she gets married that these symptoms could have presented themselves. Maybe her husband was an excellent, you know, sort of source of support for her and helped her manage it or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or he sucked. We just don't know.
He could have sucked too.
He could have sucked. Doesn't mean he deserved to die.
No, God, no.
But I do wonder if he had left, if you believe it's like, you know, in the early 2000s, maybe, and then she murdered Sergey, that maybe, you know, murdering Alexi or not, or him leaving her, like that loss in her life made mm-hmm. room for that. But if she'd already killed her husband, then she already knew what she was doing to do that to Sergey. And then she said, oh, he just ran off with some woman. They're, like, was she looking for him? Were people... Or did she know that he'd never be found?
Right.
You know, those are kinds of things. Like, did he take off or was he killed? I think it's very likely that he was killed, but I could also see the loss of him playing a role in, like, kickstarting this.
Well, and not for nothing. I could see a world where she finds out he's cheating on her because he's like, wow, this is emotionally a lot for me to deal with because it's post-war Soviet Union psychiatric care and you need psychiatric care. And I'm the only one helping and I want to be with someone else.
And we lived in this cramped apartment.
And her saying, okay, well, if I can't have you, no one can. Yeah, both of those are possible.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, what a fascinating woman. So then they determined her to be a threat to herself or others.
Yep.
Which, that's good. Clearly she is. And she's in a psychiatric unit?
Yeah, like, she's, like, incarcerated, but she's getting, like, you know, I believe she's in a facility or whatever the equivalent would be over there. She is still alive from what I can see.
Mm-hmm.
She looks like the sweetest old lady. You'd never expect it.
Of course not. Everybody loves a babushka.
Yeah, a little babushka. But then there's, so Alexei may have gone missing in like the earlier 2000s, or he could have gone missing in 2005. But we know that Sergei was killed in 2003. So did she wait a few years to report him missing?
Possible.
Who would have noticed? I don't know. I don't know what he did for work, so I can't say, you know, if he had like a sedentary job that was like very isolated and alone. I don't know that you could work from home then. I don't believe so, but I don't know. Maybe he had something where there weren't a lot of eyes or nobody noticed, or there were so many people that nobody noticed. There's a lot of different holes here that I want to point out, because if you're wondering it, I am too.
Yeah.
But still is like pretty important to consider. Like, don't just move in with anybody.
No.
This is a cautionary tale of don't invite anybody into your home that you don't know.
Yeah.
And don't trust and respect. And I mean, I think trust is the biggest thing.
Yeah. New Girl is the rare exception and media fictional film in which finding roommates on Craigslist is a good thing.
It only happened to her. Okay.
Just her.
So.
And then she married a property brother. So like she's doing good. But the rest of us have to be really careful.
You know, but it's serious. And then if you were Valentina, who's like, you know, you're in your 80s and maybe just recently you've started to sort of slow down and need a little bit of extra help. And here's this spry other single woman. You know, I'm sure it's hard to find somebody to move in and live there to do the house stuff. She could probably get a visiting nurse, but that doesn't mean she's getting like all of that home health stuff.
Right.
And if it's somebody, you know, in their say mid-30s, like they might have a family and they're not able to move in with you. So like you need a single person who is capable and willing to do this.
Yeah.
You know, for potentially a short period of time, you're kind of limited in your tenant options.
Yeah.
That this sounded like it would be a great opportunity.
Well, of course. And also what a good example of how sort of stereotyping people can be really detrimental. A sweet little old lady who just so happened to chop you up and put you in bags, like
And there's footage, and I'll post some stills from that footage of her bringing these bags. Like, she was caught red-handed. There's no second guessing it. There was no, like, she may as well have just like recorded it herself.
Yeah.
The way that it all
hey
went
guys,
down.
Welcome to my YouTube channel today.
Yes. She said, I'm Tamara. No, that's not funny.
That's a little funny.
Knock it off.
Keep
it together, Abigail.
Don't get me wrong. It's incredibly sad. It's very real. But the idea of her having a YouTube channel is kind of funny.
But the fact, you know, the blood spatter found in the house, the shower curtain, or it was like a fastener, like maybe like one of the rings or something on the shower curtain. So it was all this stuff where you could really, there was no doubt in anybody's mind on this one. And they're like, oh, wow, she murdered this woman. And then they get to her diary and she kept records, which could have been fantasy writing. I could have, you know what I'm saying? Like, of course it was written as a diary, but like, I feel like there's a lot of ways people try to manipulate that into being something else. But that's when they're like, oh, hell, she didn't just kill this one. She killed up to 14 people.
Holy cow.
And when they try to talk to her about it, they are not able to get answers. I mean, she admitted what she did. Like, she wasn't like, I wouldn't do that. It was very clear. And she's like, all right,
you got me.
But we don't know what happened to her husband for sure. We don't know what happened to the other victims for sure. I've named the ones whose names I could find.
Yeah.
Reliably. But that potentially leaves like 10 other people that are nameless.
Yeah.
You know, that haven't gotten their families haven't gotten that closure. It's just, it's awful.
Well, and it's awful, and I don't want to harp on it because I feel like I don't understand a lot of the Soviet criminal justice processes or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I just feel like if this was her 19th, you know what I mean, murder, you know, 14th, 12th, whatever, it's sloppy. And I'm not saying that to advocate for her to do it better, but I'm saying if that's where she is after all that time, I can't imagine the first ones were less. That with all that experience, she lost the ability to, like, get better at it.
Well, or she's a mentally ill woman struggling who isn't really caring too much about the process of just it, maybe just getting it out.
Right.
Like, and getting rid of.
For sure.
Rather than, like, self-preservation and evading capture.
And that's fine. But then that means we have however many others that is a woman who's mentally ill and struggling, not worrying about self-preservation, not doing anything really for self-preservation, and not getting caught until there's CCTV and a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And to that, I'm like, what the hell are we doing?
I agree. What the hell are we doing?
Like, if there are body parts in trash bins in multiple different places, and they all sit in the sun for one day, you're going to have a putrid smell in multiple different locations at least 10 other times.
Maybe she drove somewhere really cold and then dropped them off there. And
it's cold for a while, but you'd never know it forever.
I don't know. Maybe she went to Siberia. I don't know. I'm not her.
But you know what I mean?
I do.
Like,
I do.
What is our law enforcement doing here? What are police officers doing that amount of murder is going on with that little quote-unquote cleanup,
mm-hmm,
that it wasn't caught until now?
Maybe she dumped the bodies in more desolate areas where nobody you go in there searching for bodies in your free time. I don't know anybody who's really doing that.
Yeah, Russia's big.
You know, it's giant. There's a lot of land that is inhabitable. It's too cold. It's too whatever. Maybe she was taking trips, and maybe now in her older age she's unable to go as far as she was, or to lift and bring things as far as she did. I mean, I think there's a lot of different possibilities as to how.
Yeah.
So,
just all makes of me cranky. Those are lives.
Those are lives. And we don't know all of them. And let this be a lesson to you.
Yeah.
As we try to learn something from everything that we cover. To do your research on the people you let into your home and the people that you move in with, on the people that you let in your circle, the people that you let close to you. It's not, I'm not saying let nobody close to you. God, a lot of that I think we don't have enough of.
Mm-hmm.
But
run a Google search.
Yeah, but like protecting that, and I mean doing whatever research you are able to do instead of maybe just some transactional roommate that very quickly you allow in.
Like, for instance, I heavily, heavily, heavily recommend Googling your, like, neighbors,
mm-hmm,
whenever you can.
Your neighborhood.
Your neighborhood in general. If you have any weird neighbors. I had a really, really weird downstairs neighbor once.
Yeah, you did.
Fucking wild. I love to Google them. I Google them still. I'm like, what are y'all up to? I know I'm going to find something someday.
Yeah.
But just crazy. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing this one. This is nowhere near as fun as Kate Bush's Babushka song, but it was a very interesting case.
Well, thank you. I thought I needed something away from kids.
Yeah.
As you might know, last week really hurt.
It hurted it.
Pretty bad. And I do have a link in here for the potato salad, if anybody was wondering. Also, just so you know, if you're looking at sources that I used for this, they're Olivier salad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it differently every time I say it, but that potato salad recipe, and of course, there's many renditions of it.
For sure.
I do have that linked in my sources as well, as I did use it.
Hey.
But yeah, I needed a little bit of a break from that, and not that this is any less horrific, but in a different way that isn't a 13-year-old child being abused. But this is another cautionary tale of the decisions and that you make and the people that you allow into your home. Don't take that lightly. That's your space. That's your peace. That is your comfort zone and space, and you shouldn't take it lightly. Should be taken very seriously. And
you gotta protect your peace and protect yourself.
You gotta do it. You just gotta do it.
Yeah. Well, if you wanted to see those photos, that recipe, maybe we'll find a picture of the salad all made up.
Yeah, right.
Any of that, the people, the places, the things that we talk about, you could do that on our Instagram. You could also send us a little Instagram DM or email us your pod pet pictures, which we love. We just put up a post about them recently.
Yeah.
I've been fixating on them. They're so cute.
I love the little pod. We got a few after that post went up too, because people are like, oh, I forgot. And I'm like, oh my God, send them.
Okay, yes. So all of the above. Send so many. And then also, if you wanted to see any of our resources, highlights, or previews, you could do that there as well. We would love case recommendations, requests, hometown murders that you're fascinated with, or weird disappearances you're fascinated with. Let us know all of it. We are here for you. We like to do the things that we know you want to hear. And if you wanted to otherwise support the pod, you could go to our Redbubble for merch, or you could send us a cup of coffee via PayPal or Venmo, which are also down in our link tree. So we hope that you have a fun week. Dip your little toe into those for us. And oh, and don't forget to give us a 5-star review, please. It helps us so much and we love them.
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. Now, if I do look at my clock, that was about time for true crime. Bye.
Bye.
Hasta mañana.